Chapter 19. Vows. Uneasy, Loyal watched Nynaeve glide off down the lamp-lit corridor in one direction and Varen in the other. Neither was much taller than his waist, but they were Aes Sedai. The fact knotted his tongue sufficiently that by the time he had worked up his nerve to ask one of them to accompany him, both were out of sight around sharp corners. The manor house was a rambling place, added to over many years with no real overall plan that he could discern, and hallways frequently met at odd angles. He really wished he had an Aes Sedai for company when he faced his mother. Even Cadswain, although she made him very nervous with how she was always pinching at Rand. Sooner or later, Rand was going to explode. He was not the same man Loyal first met in Camelon, or even the man he had left in Cairhien. The mood around Rand was dark and stony now, a dense patch of lion's claw and treacherous ground underfoot. The whole house felt that way with Rand in it. A lean, gray-haired serving woman carrying a basket of folded towels gave a start, then shook her head and muttered something under her breath before offering him a brief curtsy and walking on. She made a small sidestep as though she was moving around something, or someone. He stared at the spot and scratched behind his ear. Maybe he could only see Ogier dead. Not that he really wanted to. It was sad enough just knowing that human dead could no longer rest. Having the same confirmed for Ogier would be enough to break his heart. Most likely they would appear only inside Steading, in any case. He would very much like to see a town vanish, though. Not a real town, but a town that was as dead as those spirits the humans claimed to see. You might be able to walk its streets before it melted and see what people were like before the War of the Hundred Years, or even the Trolloc Wars. So Varen said, and she seemed to know a very great deal about it. That would certainly be worth a mention in his book. It was going to be a fine book. Scratching his beard with two fingers, the thing itched. He sighed. It would have been a fine book. Standing there in the corridor was only putting off the inevitable. Put off clearing the brush, and you always find chokevine in it, so the old saying went. Only he felt as though the chokevine was tight around him instead of a tree. Breathing hard, he followed the serving woman all the way to the wide stairs that led up to the Ogier rooms. The staircase had two sturdy banisters, shoulder-high on the gray-haired woman, and stout enough to give a decent handhold. He was often afraid just to brush against stair rails made for humans for fear he might break them. One ran down the middle, with the steps along the wood-paneled hall pitched for human feet, those on the outside for Ogier. The woman was old, as humans counted years, yet she climbed more quickly than he and was scurrying down the corridor by the time he reached the top. Doubtless she was taking the towels to his mother's room and to Elder Hammond's and Aerith's. Surely they would prefer to get dry before talking. He would suggest that. It would gain him time to think. His thoughts seemed as sluggish as his feet, and his feet felt like millstones. There were six bedrooms built for Ogier along the corridor, which itself was properly scaled for them. His upstretched hands would have come a pace short of touching the ceiling beams, along with a storeroom, a bathing room with a large copper tub, and the sitting room. This was the oldest part of the house, dating back nearly 500 years. A lifetime for a very old Ogier, but many lifetimes for humans. They lived such brief lives, except for Aes Sedai. That had to be why they flitted about like hummingbirds. But even Aes Sedai could be nearly as precipitous as the rest. That was a puzzlement. The sitting room door was carved with a great tree, not Ogier work, yet finely detailed and instantly recognizable. He stopped, tugging his coat straight, combing his hair with his fingers, wishing he had time to black his boots. There was an ink stain on his cuff. No time to do anything about that, either. Cadswain was right. His mother was not a woman to be kept waiting. Strange that Cadswain knew of her. Perhaps knew her by the way she had spoken. Kovril, daughter of Ella, daughter of Sung, was a famous speaker, but he had not realized she was known outside. Light, he was all but panting with anxiety. Trying to control his breathing, he went in. Even here the hinges creaked. The servants had been aghast when he asked after some oil to put on them, That was their task. He was a guest. But they still had not gotten around to it themselves. The high-ceilinged room was quite spacious, with dark-polished wallpapers and vine-carved chairs and small vine-carved tables and wrought-iron stand-lamps of a proper size, their mirrored flames dancing above his head. Except for a shelf of books, all old enough that the leather bindings were flaking and all of which he had read before, only a small bowl of sungwood was Ogier made. A nice piece. He wished he knew who had sung it. But it was aged enough that singing to it had failed to raise so much as an echo. Yet everything had been made by someone who at least had been to a steading. The pieces would have looked at home in any dwelling. Of course the room looked nothing like a room in a steading, but Lord Algarin's ancestor had made an effort to have his visitors feel comfortable. His mother was standing in front of one of the brick fireplaces, a strong-faced woman, with her vine-embroidered skirts spread to let the flames dry them. He heaved a sigh of relief at seeing she was not as wet as he had expected, although it put paid to suggesting that they take the time to get dry. Their rain cloaks must have developed leaks. They did that after a time, as the aniseed oil wore off. Maybe her temper would not be as bad as he feared either. White-haired Elder Hammond, his flaring coat dark with damp in several large patches, was examining one of the axes from the wall, shaking his head over it. Its haft was as long as he was tall. Made during the Trolloc Wars, or even before, there were a pair of those, the long axe heads inlaid with gold and silver, and a pair of ornate pointed pruning knives, with long shafts as well. Of course, pruning knives, sharp on one side and saw-toothed on the other, always had long handles, but the inlays and long red tassels indicated that these had been made for weapons, too. Not the most felicitous choices for hanging in a room meant for reading or conversation or the quiet contemplation of stillness. But Loyal's eyes swept past his mother and Elder Hammond to the other fireplace where Aerith was drying her own skirts, short and almost fragile-appearing. Her mouth was straight, her nose short and well-rounded, her eyes the exact color of a silver bell's ripe seed pod. In short, she was beautiful. And her ears, sticking up through the glossy black hair that hung down her back, curving and plump, tipped with fine tufts that looked as soft as dandelion down, they were the most gorgeous ears he had ever seen. Not that he would be crude enough to say so. She smiled at him, a very mysterious smile, and his own ears quivered with embarrassment. Surely she could not know what he had been thinking. Could she? Rand said women could sometimes, but that was human women.
"So here you are,"
his mother said, planting her fists on her hips. There were no smiles from her. Her brows were drawn down, her jaw set. If this was her better temper, she might as well have been drenched.
"I must say you've led me a merry chase, but I have you in hand now, and I do not mean to let you run. What is that on your lip? And your chin? Well, you can shave those right off again. Don't you grimace at me, son Loyal."
Fingering the growth on his upper lip uneasily, he tried to smooth his face. When your mother named you son, she was in no mood to trifle with. But it was hard. He wanted his beard and mustaches. Some might think it pretentious, as young as he was, but just the same.
"A merry chase, indeed,"
Elder Hammond said dryly, hanging the axe back on its hooks. He had long white mustaches that fell past his chin, and a long narrow beard that hung to his chest. True, he was well above 300 years old, but it still seemed unfair.
"A very merry chase. First we walked to Cairhien, having heard you were there, only you had gone. After a stop at Steading Tsofu, we walked to Camelon, where young Althor informed us you were in the Two Rivers and took us there. But you were gone again. To Camelon, it seemed."
His eyebrows rose almost to his hairline.
"I began to think we were playing Ring in the Dell."
"The people in Emmon's Field told us how heroic you were,"
Aerith said, her high voice like music. Clutching her skirts with both hands, ears fluttering with excitement, she seemed about to bounce up and down.
They told us all about you fighting Trollocs and Murdrol, and going out among them by yourself to seal the Manetheran Waygate so no more could come."
"I wasn't by myself,"
Loyal protested, waving his hands. He thought his ears might fly from his head, they were twitching so with embarrassment.
"Gaul was with me. We did it together. I'd never have reached the Waygate without Gaul."
She wrinkled her delicate nose at him, dismissing Gaul's participation. His mother sniffed. Her ears were rigid with distaste.
"Foolishness! Fighting in battles? Putting yourself in danger? Gambling? All of it! Pure foolishness, and there'll be no more of it."
Elder Hammond harumphed, ears twitching irritably, and folded his hands behind his back. He disliked being interrupted.
"So we returned to Camelin to find you gone, and then to Cairhien once more to find you gone yet again."
"And you put yourself in danger again in Cairhien,"
Loyal's mother broke in, shaking a finger at him.
"Have you no sense at all?"
"The Aiel said you were very brave at Dumai's Wells,"
Aerith murmured, looking at him through her long eyelashes. He swallowed hard. Her gaze made his throat feel tight. He knew he should look away, but how could he be demure when she was looking at him?
"In Cairhien, your mother decided she couldn't stay away from the Great Stump any longer, though why I cannot say, since they aren't likely to reach any sort of decision for another year or two, so we set out to return to Steading Shangtai in the hope we could find you later."
Elder Hammond said all of that very fast, glaring at the two women as if he thought they might break in on him again. His beard and mustaches seemed to bristle. Loyal's mother gave another sniff, sharper.
"I expect to bring a decision very quickly, in a month or two, or I'd never have given over the search for Loyal, even temporarily. Now that I've found him, we can finish matters and be on our way without any more delay."
She took in Elder Hammond, who was frowning, his ears slanted back, and amended her tone. He was an elder, after all.
"Forgive me, Elder Hammond. I meant to say, if it pleases you, will you perform the ceremony?" "I believe that it does please me, Kovril,"
he said mildly, much too mildly. When Loyal heard that tone from his teacher, with ears back, he had always known that he had put a foot very badly wrong. Elder Hammond had been known to throw a piece of chalk at a pupil when he used that tone.
"Since I abandoned my students, not to mention speaking to the Great Stump, to follow you on this wild chase for that very reason, I believe it does please me indeed. Aerith, you are very young."
"She's past 80, old enough to marry,"
Loyal's mother said sharply, folding her arms across her chest. Her ears twitched with impatience.
"Her mother and I reached agreement. You yourself witnessed us signing the betrothal and Loyal's dowry."
Elder Hammond's ears tilted back a little further, and his shoulders hunched as if he was gripping his hands together very hard behind his back. His eyes never left Aerith.
"I know you want to marry Loyal, but are you sure you are ready? Taking a husband is a grave responsibility."
Loyal wished someone would ask him that question, but that was not the way. His mother and Aerith had reached their agreement, and only Aerith could stop it now. If she wanted to. Did he want her to? He could not stop thinking of his book. He could not stop thinking of Aerith. She certainly looked grave.
"My weaving sells well, and I am ready to buy another loom and take an apprentice. But that may not be what you mean. I am ready to tend a husband."
Suddenly she grinned, a lovely grin that divided her face in two.
"Especially one with such beautiful long eyebrows."
Loyal's ears quivered, and so did Elder Hammond's, if not so much. Women were very free in their talk among themselves, so he had heard, but usually they tried not to embarrass men with it. Usually. His mother's ears actually trembled with amusement. The older man cleared his throat.
This is serious, Aerith. Come now. If you are sure, take his hands.
Without hesitation, she came to stand in front of Loyal, smiling up at him as she took his hands in hers. Her small hands felt very warm. His felt numb and cold. He swallowed. It really was going to happen.
Aerith, daughter of Iva, daughter of Aelar,
Elder Hammond said, holding one hand palm down over each of their heads.
Will you take Loyal, son of Arendt, son of Halen, as husband, and vow under the light and by the tree to treasure, esteem, and love him so long as he lives, to care for him and tend him, and to guide his feet on the path they should follow?
Under the light and by the tree, I so vow.
Aerith's voice was firm and clear, and her smile seemed to have grown wider than her face.
Loyal, son of Arendt, son of Halen, will you accept Aerith, daughter of Iva, daughter of Aelar, as wife, and vow under the light and by the tree to treasure, esteem, and love her so long as she lives, to care for her, and to heed her guidance?
Loyal took a deep breath. His ears trembled. He wanted to marry her, he did, just not yet.
Under the light and by the tree I so vow,
he said hoarsely.
Then under the light and by the tree I declare you wed. May the blessings of the light and the tree be upon you always.
Loyal looked down at his wife. His wife. She raised a hand and stroked slender fingers along his mustaches. The beginnings of mustaches, anyway.
You are very handsome, and I think mustaches will be beautiful on you. A beard, too.
Nonsense,
his mother said. Surprisingly, she was dabbing at her eyes with a small lace handkerchief. She was never emotional.
He's much too young for that sort of thing.
For a moment, he thought Aerith's ears began to slant back. That had to be his imagination. He had had a number of long talks with her. She was a wonderful conversationalist, though come to think, for the most part, she listened. But what little she did say was always very cogent, and he was sure she possessed no sort of temper at all. He had no time to think on it in any event. Resting her hands on his arms, she rose on tiptoes, and he bent to rub his nose against hers. In truth, they nosed for longer than they should have, with Elder Hammond and his mother present, but others faded from his thoughts as he inhaled his wife's scent and she his. And the feel of her nose on his. Pure bliss. He cupped the back of her head and barely had the presence of mind not to finger her ear. She tugged the tuft on one of his. After a while, a very long while it seemed, voices intruded.
It is still raining, Kovril. You cannot seriously be suggesting we set out again when we have a sound roof over our heads and proper beds to sleep in for a change. No, I say, no. I will not sleep on the ground tonight, or in a barn, or worst of all, in a house where my feet and knees hang over the end of the largest bed available. There have been times I've seriously thought of refusing hospitality, and to the pit with rudeness.
If you insist,
his mother said grudgingly.
But I want an early start come morning. I refuse to waste an hour more than I must. The Book of Translation must be opened as soon as possible.
Loyal jerked erect, aghast.
That's what the great stump is discussing? They can't do that. Not now. We must leave this world eventually, so we can come to it when the wheel turns,
his mother said, striding to the nearest fireplace to spread her skirts again.
That is written. Now is exactly the right time, and the sooner the better. Is that what you think, Elder Hammond?
Loyal asked worriedly.
No, my boy, not at all. Before we left, I gave a speech of 3 hours that I think swayed a few minds in the right direction."
Elder Hammond picked up a tall yellow pitcher and filled a blue cup, but rather than drink, he frowned into the tea.
"Your mother has swayed more, I fear. She may even get her decision in months, as she says."
Aerith filled a cup for his mother, then two more, bringing one to him. His ears quivered with embarrassment yet again. He should have done that. He had a great deal to learn about being a husband, but he knew that much.
"I wish I could address the stump," he said bitterly. "You sound eager, husband."
Husband? That meant Aerith was very serious. It was almost as bad as being called son loyal.
"What would you say to the stump?"
"I won't have him embarrassed, Aerith,"
his mother said before he could open his mouth.
"Loyal writes well, and Elder Hammond says he may have the makings of a scholar about him, but he gets tongue-tied before even 100. Besides, he's only a boy."
Elder Hammond had said that? Loyal wondered when his ears would stop quivering.
"Any married man may address the stump," Aerith said firmly.
There was no doubt this time. Her ears definitely slanted back.
"Will you allow me to tend my own husband, Mother Coverill?"
His mother's mouth moved, but no sound came out, and her eyebrows were halfway up her forehead. He did not think he had ever seen her so taken aback, though she must have expected this. A wife always took precedence with her husband over his mother.
"Well, husband, what would you say?"
He was not eager, he was desperate. He took a long swallow of the spice-scented tea, but his mouth felt just as dry afterward. His mother was right. The more people were listening, the more he tended to forget what he intended to say and go off on tangents. In truth, he had to admit that sometimes he rambled a bit with only a few listeners. Just a bit, now and then. He knew the forms. A child of 50 knew the forms. Yet he could not make the words come. The few listening to him now were not just any few. His mother was a famous speaker, Elder Hammond a noted one, not to mention being an elder. And there was Aerith. A man wanted to stand well in his wife's eyes. Turning his back on them, he strode to the nearest window and stood rolling the teacup between his palms. The window was sized decently, though the panes set in the carved casement were no larger than those in the rooms below. The rain had dwindled to a drizzle falling from a gray sky, and despite bubbles in the glass, he could make out the trees beyond the fields, pine and sour gum, and the occasional oak, all full of new growth. Algarin's people tended their forest well, clearing out the deadfall to rob wildfire of its tinder. Fire had to be used carefully. The words came more easily now that he could not see the others watching him. Should he begin with the longing? Could they dare leave if they would begin dying in a handful of years? No, that question would have been addressed first thing and suitable answers found, else the stump would have finished inside a year. Light, if he did not address the stump... For a moment he saw the crowds standing all around him, hundreds and hundreds of men and women waiting to hear his words, perhaps several thousand. His tongue tried to cling to the roof of his mouth. He blinked, and there was only the bubbled glass before him and the trees. He had to do it. He was not particularly brave, whatever Aerith thought, but he had learned about bravery watching humans, watching them hang on no matter how strong the winds grew, fight when they had no hope, fight and win because they fought with desperate courage. Suddenly he knew what to say.
"In the War of the Shadow, we did not huddle in our steading, hoping no Trollocs or Murdrall would be driven to enter. We did not open the Book of Translation and flee. We marched alongside the humans and fought the Shadow. In the Trolloc Wars, we neither hid in the steading nor opened the Book of Translation. We marched with the humans and fought the Shadow. In the darkest years, when hope seemed gone, we fought the Shadow.
and by the War of the Hundred Years we had learnt not to get ourselves tangled in human affairs,"
his mother put in. That was allowed. Speaking could turn into a debate unless the pure beauty of your words held the listeners. She had once spoken from sunrise to sunset in favor of a very unpopular position without a single interruption, and the next day no one had risen to speak against her. He could not form beautiful sentences. He could only say what he believed. He did not turn from the window.
"The War of the Hundred Years was a human affair, and none of ours. The Shadow is our affair. When it is the Shadow that must be fought, our axes have always grown long handles. Perhaps in a year, or five, or ten, we will open the Book of Translation. But if we do it now, we cannot run away with any real hope of safety. Tom and Gaiden is coming, and on that hangs the fate not only of this world, but of any world we might flee to. When fire threatens the trees, we do not run away and hope that the flames will not follow us. We fight. Now the Shadow is coming like wildfire, and we dare not run from it."
Something was moving among the trees, all along the line he could see. A herd of cattle? A very big herd, if so.
"That isn't bad," his mother said.
"Much too plain-spoken to carry any weight at a steading stump, much less the great stump, of course, but not bad. Go on."
"Trollocs," he breathed.
That was what it was. Thousands of trollocs in black spiked mail spilling out of the trees at a run with scythe-curved swords raised, shaking their spiked spears, some carrying torches. Trollocs as far as he could see to left and right. Not thousands, tens of thousands. Aerith pushed in beside him at the window and gasped.
"So many. Are we going to die, Loyal?"
She did not sound afraid. She sounded excited.
"Not if I can warn Rand and the others."
He was already starting for the door. Only Aes Sedai and Ashaman could save them now.
"Here, my boy, I think we may need these."
He turned just in time to catch the long-handled axe that Elder Hammond tossed him. The other man's ears were back all the way, laid flat against his skull. Loyal realized his own were, too.
"Here, Aerith,"
his mother said calmly, lifting down one of the pruning knives.
"If they get inside, we will try to hold them at the stairs."
"You are my hero, husband,"
Aerith said as she took the knife's shaft in hand.
"But if you get yourself killed, I will be very angry with you."
She sounded as if she meant it. And then he and Elder Hammond were running down the corridor together, pounding down the stairs, bellowing at the tops of their lungs a warning and a battle cry that had not been heard in over 2,000 years.
"Trollocs coming! Up axes and clear the field! Trollocs coming!"
"So I will take care of Tyr, Loghain, while you—"
Abruptly, Rand wrinkled his nose. It was not that he actually smelled a rotting midden heap suddenly, but he felt as if he did, and the feeling was getting stronger.
"Shadow spawn," Cadswain said quietly, putting down her embroidery and rising.
His skin tingled as she embraced the source. Or maybe it was Olivia, walking briskly toward the windows after the Green Sister. Min stood, drawing a pair of throwing knives from her coat sleeves. At the same instant, through the thick walls, he faintly heard Ogier shouting. There was no mistaking those deep, drum-like voices.
"Trollocs coming! Up axes and clear the field!"
With an oath, he leaped to his feet and ran to a window. Trollocs in thousands came running through the light rain across the newly planted fields. Trollocs as tall as Ogier and taller. Trollocs with ram's horns and goat's horns, wolves' snouts, boar's snouts. Trollocs with eagle's beaks and crests of feathers. Muddy earth splashing beneath boots and hooves and paws. Silent as death they ran. Black-clad Murdral galloped behind them, cloaks hanging as if they were standing still. He could see 30 or 40, How many more on other sides of the house? Others had heard the Ogier's cries, or maybe just looked out a window. Lightning began to fall among the charging Trollocs, silvery bolts that struck with a roar and hurled huge bodies in every direction. In other places, the ground erupted in flames, fountaining dirt and parts of Trollocs, heads, arms, legs wheeling through the air. Balls of fire struck them and exploded, each killing dozens. But on they ran, as fast as horses, if not faster. Rand could not see the weaves that drew some of those lightning bolts. Now that they were discovered, the Trollocs began to shout, a wordless roar of rage. In the thatch-roofed outbuildings, large, sturdy barns and stables, some of Bashir's Saldaeans stuck their heads out and quickly pulled them back again, drawing the doors shut behind them. "You told your Aes Sedai they could channel to defend themselves?" he said calmly. "Do I look fool enough not to?" Loghain snarled. At another window, he already held Saeedin, nearly as much as Rand could draw. He was weaving as fast as he could. "Do you intend to help or just watch, my Lord Dragon?" There was entirely too much sarcasm in that, but now was not the time to bring it up. Drawing a deep breath, Rand gripped the casement on either side of the window against the dizziness that would come. The dragon's gold-maned heads on the backs of his hands seemed to writhe, and reached out to seize the power. His head spun as Saeedin flooded into him, icy flames and crumbling mountains, a chaos trying to pull him under, but blessedly clean. He still felt the wonder of that. His head spun and his stomach wanted to empty itself, the odd illness that should have gone with the taint, yet that was not why he clung to the casement even harder. The one power filled him, but in that moment of dizziness, Luz Theron had seized it away from him. Numb with horror, he stared at the Trollocs and Murdral racing toward the outbuildings. With the power in him, he could make out the pins fastened to massive mailed shoulders, the silver whirlwind of the Ofrite Band, and the blood-red trident of the Kobal, the forked lightning of the Gremlan and the hooked axe of the Algol, the iron fist of the Daimon and the red blood-stained fist of the Noman. And there were skulls. The horned skull of the Dovol, and the piled human skulls of the Gargael, and the skull cloven by a scythe-curved sword of the Jinnen, and the dagger-pierced skull of the Banshin. Trollocs liked skulls, if they could be said to like anything. It seemed the 12 principal bands might all be involved, and some of the lesser. He saw pins he did not recognize, what seemed a staring eye, a dagger-pierced hand, a man-shape wrapped in flames. They neared the outbuildings where swords were beginning to thrust through the thatch as the Saldaeans tried to cut ways onto the roofs. Thatch was tough. They would need to work desperately hard. Odd the thoughts that came when a madman who wanted to die might well kill you in the next heartbeat. Flows of air pushed the casement in front of him out in a shower of shattered glass and fragmented wood.
"My hands," Luz Theron panted. "Why can't I move my hands? I need to raise my hands."
Earth, air, and fire went into a weave Rand did not know. 6 of them at once. Except that as soon as he saw the spinning, he did know. Blossom of fire. 6 vertical red shafts appeared among the Trollocs, 10 feet tall and thinner than Rand's forearm. The nearest Trollocs would be hearing their shrill whine, but unless memories had been passed down from the War of the Shadow, they would not realize they were hearing death. Luz Theron spun the last thread of air and fire blossomed. With a roar that shook the manor house, each red shaft expanded in a heartbeat to a disk of flame 30 feet across. Horned heads and snouted heads flew into the air, and pinwheeling arms, booted legs, and legs that ended in paws or hooves. Trollocs 100 paces and more away from the explosions went down, and only some got up again. Even as he was spinning those webs, Luz Theron spun 6 others. Spirit touched with fire, the weave for a gateway, but then he added touches of earth, so and so. The familiar silvery blue vertical streaks appeared, spaced out not far from the manor house, ground Rand knew well, rotating into, not openings, but the misty back of a gateway, 4 paces by 4. Rather than remaining open, they rotated shut again, opening and shutting continuously, and rather than remaining fixed, they sped toward the Trollocs.
gateways and yet not. Death gates. As soon as the death gates began to move, Luce Theron knotted the webs, a loose knotting that would hold only for minutes before allowing the whole weave to dissipate, and began spinning again. More death gates, more blossoms of fire, rattling the walls of the house, blowing Trollocs apart, flinging them down. The first of the speeding death gates struck the Trollocs and carved through them. It was not just the slicing edge of the constantly opening and closing gateways. Where a death gate passed, there simply were no Trollocs remaining.
"My hands," the madman howled. "My hands."
Slowly, Rand raised his hands, stuck them through the opening. Immediately, Luce Theron wove fire and earth in intricate combination, and red filaments flashed from Rand's fingertips, 10 from each fanning out. Arrows of fire, this. He knew. As soon as those vanished, more appeared, so fast they seemed to flicker rather than actually go away. Trollocs, struck by the filaments, jerked as flesh and blood, heated in a flash beyond boiling, erupted, jerked and fell, holes blown entirely through their thick bodies. Often two or three behind fell victim as well before a filament died. He spread his fingers and moved his hands slowly from side to side, spreading death across the whole line. Blossoms of fire appeared that were not his weaving, and death gates, slightly smaller than Luce Theron's, and arrows of fire that must have been Loghain's. The other Ashaman were paying attention, but few would be where they could see those last two webs spun. Trollocs fell by the hundreds, the thousands, riven by lightning bolts and balls of fire, blossoms of fire, and death gates and arrows of fire. The earth itself exploding beneath their feet, yet on they raced, roaring and waving their weapons, Murdral riding close behind, black-bladed swords in hand. As they reached the outbuildings, some of the Trollocs surrounded them, pounding on the doors with their fists, prying at the boards of the walls with their swords and spears, tossing flaming torches onto the thatched roofs. Saldaeans up there, working their horse bows as fast as they could, kicked the torches back down, but some hung up on the edges of the roof and flames began catching even on damp thatch. "The fires," Rand thought at Luce Theron. "The Saldaeans will burn. Do something." Luce Theron made no reply, only wove death as fast as he could and hurled it at the Trollocs, death gates and arrows of fire. A Murdral, riddled by half a dozen red filaments, was flung from its saddle, then another. A third lost its head to an arrow of fire in an explosion of boiled blood and flesh, but that one rode on, waving its sword, as if it did not know it was dead. Rand was seeking them out. If the Murdral were all killed, the Trollocs might well turn and run. Death gates and arrows of fire only, Luce Theron spun now. The mass of Trollocs was too close to the manor house for blossoms of fire. Some of the Ashaman apparently did not realize that right away. The room shook to great booms, the whole manor house shook, as if struck by huge sledgehammers, shook as though about to shake apart. And then there were no more explosions, except where a fireball erupted, or the ground itself exploded to throw Trollocs like broken toys. The sky seemed to rain lightning. Silver-blue bolts struck continuously so close to the house that the hair on Rand's arms and chest tried to lift, the hair on his head. Some of the Trollocs succeeded in forcing open the doors to one of the barns and began flooding inside. He shifted his hands, cutting down those still outside with flickering red filaments that blew holes in them. Some had managed to get inside, but those the Saldaeans would have to deal with themselves. On another barn and a stable, flames were beginning to ripple up the thatch, men coughing from the acrid smoke as they shot their bows. "Listen to me, Luce Theron, the fire, you must do something." Luce Theron said nothing, just spun his webs to kill Trollocs and Murdral.
"Loghain," Rand shouted, "the fires, put them out."
The other man did not answer either, but Rand saw the weaves that pulled the heat from the flames, killing them. They just vanished, leaving behind cold, blackened thatch where not even tendrils of smoke rose. Death walked among the Trollocs, but they were so close that even the explosions of fireballs rattled the house now. Suddenly there was a Murdral afoot beside the window, pale eyeless face as calm as an Aes Sedai's, black sword already stabbing toward him. Two thrown Aiel spears took it in the chest, and a throwing knife blossomed in its throat, but it only staggered before resuming the thrust. Rand bunched his fingers together, and just before the blade reached him, 100 arrows of fire ripped through the Murdral, flinging it back 20 paces to lie riddled and leaking black blood onto the ground. Myrdral seldom died right away, but this one never twitched. Hurriedly, Rand searched for more targets, but he realized that Luce Theron had stopped channeling. He could still feel the goosebumps that told him Cadswain and Olivia held the power, still feel Syadine and Loghain, but the other man was weaving no more webs either. Outside, the ground lay carpeted with bodies and parts of bodies from the fields almost to the manor house walls. Within paces of them. A few horses belonging to Myrdral still stood, one holding up a foreleg as if it were broken. A headless Myrdral staggered about, flailing wildly with its sword, and here and there a Trolloc jerked or tried to lift itself and failed, but nothing else moved. "It's done," he thought. "It's done, Luce Theron. You can release Syadine now." Harrelin and Anila were standing on the table, veiled and spears in hand. Min stood beside them, her face grim, a throwing knife in either hand. The bond was full of fear, and not for herself, he suspected. They had saved his life, but he had to save it himself now. "A close-run thing," Loghain muttered. "If this had happened before I arrived... a close-run thing." He gave himself a shake and released the source, turning away from his glassless window. "Did you intend keeping these new weaves for your favorites like Taim? Those gateways. Where did we send those Trollocs? I just copied your weave exactly." "It doesn't matter where they went," Rand said absently. His attention was focused on Luce Theron. The madman, the bloody voice in his head, drew a little deeper on the power. "Let go, man. Shadowspawn can't survive passing through a gateway."
"I want to die," Luce Theron said. "I want to join Ilyena."
If you really wanted to die, why did you kill Trollocs? Rand thought. Why kill that Myrdral? "People will find groups of dead Trollocs and maybe Myrdral without a mark on them," he said aloud.
"I seem to remember dying," Luce Theron murmured. "I remember how I did it."
He drew deeper still, and small pains grew in Rand's temples. "Not too many in any one place, though. The destination shifts every time a death gate opens." Rand rubbed at his temples. That pain was a warning. He was close to the amount of Syadine he could hold without dying or being burnt out. "You can't die yet," he told Luce Theron. "We have to reach Tarmogoyden or the world dies."
"A death gate," Loghain said, his voice tinged with distaste. "Why are you still holding the power?" he asked suddenly. "And so much. If you're trying to show me that you're stronger than I am, I already know it. I saw how large your death gates were compared to mine. And I'd say you're holding every drop of Syadine that you can safely."
That certainly caught everyone's attention. Min tucked her knives away and leapt down from the table, the bond suddenly so full of fear it seemed to throb with it. Harrelin and Anila exchanged worried glances, then went back to staring out the windows. They did not trust Trollocs to be dead until the corpses were 3 days buried. Olivia took a step toward him, frowning, but he shook his head slightly and she turned back to her window, though her frown remained. Cadswain glided down the room, her smooth face sternly composed.
"What does he feel?" she demanded of Min. "Don't toy with me, girl, you know the cost of that. I know that he bonded you, and you know I know. Is he afraid?"
"He's never afraid," Min said. "Except for me, or..."
She set her jaw stubbornly and folded her arms beneath her breasts, fixing Cadswain with a glare that dared the Green Sister to do her worst. By the tangled mix of emotions ranging from fear to shame that she tried to keep out of the bond and failed, she had some idea of what Cadswain's worst could be.
"I'm standing under your nose," Rand said. "If you want to know how I feel, ask me." "Luce Theron," he thought.
There was no answer, and the Syadine filling him did not slacken. His temples began to throb.
"Well..." Cadswain said impatiently. "I feel right as well, water." "Luce Theron?" but I have a rule for you, Cad Swain. Don't threaten Min again. In fact, leave her alone altogether.
Well, well, the boy shows some teeth.
Golden birds and fish, stars and moons, swayed as she shook her head.
Just don't show too many. And you might ask the young woman whether she wants your protection.
Strangely, Min had shifted her frown to him, and the bond was threaded with irritation. Light, it was bad enough that she did not like him worrying about her. Now she seemed to want to take on Cad Swain single-handed, something he would not be eager to do himself.
"We can die at Tommen Garden," Luce Theron said.
And suddenly the power drained out of him.
"He released,"
Loghain said, as if he were suddenly on Cadswain's side.
"I know," she told him.
He whipped his head around in surprise.
"Min can deal with you in your own way if she wishes," Rand said, starting for the door. "But don't threaten her."
"Yes," he thought. "We can die at Tommen Garden."